Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC. Honey, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm rearranging all my beautiful Voyage AC products. Aren't they beautiful?
Wow, they're gorgeous. But honey, there's so many bottles.
I know. I might have a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, you think so? But I think this one is my favorite.
Oh, which one? The Jasmine Cocoa or the Dirty Whore?
Wow, they're both really sexy.
Well, Melanie Apple really knows what she's doing. Get it?
Knows what she's doing. Yeah, I get it.
Voyage AC has it all. You have to check out all their beautiful candles, these incredible fragrances, fabulous beachwear, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all of our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Eichenhorst, and I'm the only one in the room because I found hope after a deadly accident. Unless you have made choices that are going to get you to a place where prison is a option, you feel like you're not going to be in that situation. And he looks at me and he said, I'm normally making an arrest right now, but your situation is complicated. He said, if he lives, you'll probably hear from his insurance. And he said, if he doesn't make it, you'll still hear from his insurance and probably from his family's attorney. We'll conduct the investigation and this will go to grand jury. And then you'll find out whether or not you'll be charged.
Imagine driving home, your daughter's in the back seat, and suddenly a flash of light on the driver's side warns you that there's a vehicle approaching, and you and your girls brace for impact. Jennifer Eichenhorst, teacher, wife, mother of four, and woman of strong faith, was almost home when she realized that the vehicle she collided with was a motorcycle, and that somehow she caused a devastating accident. So what would you do if the man on the bike died a few days later at the hospital? Would you lose hope and question your faith? Or would you force yourself to keep going and start a podcast that gives hope to others who have killed someone by accident? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl, and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Hi, Jennifer Eichenhorst. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we are so glad to have you. And before we start the interview, I want to ask you this question. I hope you'll think it's fun as I do. Scott and I have had a lot of fun with this these last two interviews. What would you rather do without heat or AC or your smartphone for a year?
Oh,
I'm sorry. It's heat and AC. So you would have neither heat or air conditioning or your smartphone.
Oh, I think I'm going to go without the phone.
Really?
Honey,
yes.
Don't you remember what happened in Texas last year?
In Texas.
Year?
Yes. Yes. That's
oh my
right.
gosh. She would have. Yeah.
That's
if you had
true.
Asked me that before, you know, 2021.
Right. Right.
We realized just how precious energy is. It went downhill real fast.
Yeah, that is so true. So, yes, you want to keep your heat and AC all year
yes,
round.
Yes, please.
Well, good, yeah, get on the phone. Just drop that thing
just
for a year.
Just drop the phone mm-hmm. for a year. Absolutely.
Man. Well, I need to unplug anyway, right?
Right. We all do.
I mean, I think they should do a podcast where you don't have a phone for a year and talk about what that's like.
Wow.
Oh, like a vlog.
Right.
Like a vlog. Mm-hmm. But then what would you vlog on?
Yeah,
I guess
right?
your computer.
You'd have to be on a computer.
Thank you for that answer. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So today we're talking, like I said, to Jennifer Eichenhorst. She is the host of Accidental Hope podcast. She is a mom of four, wife, and a middle school math teacher, which you just got to love that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her story changed when she caused an accident that killed someone. Today, Jennifer shares how her podcast gave her a place to share her story, help people like her, and create good out of a tragic situation. And then Jennifer's podcasting journey reminds us that we can do big things even when we're scared, which is just beautiful.
Yeah, I love this.
Before we actually get into the interview, I want to thank Scott Johnson out loud for connecting me with you. Very generous of him because you had been were you his first guest?
Yes.
You were his first guest. Wow.
Very first episode.
So I was looking at it and I was like, it says episode one. That can't be. It can't be episode one. Was it episode one of the season? No, but it was episode
was his
one.
First.
Wow.
Numero uno.
Numero uno. Well, both of yeah. you did an incredible job. So I just want to shout him out for that and thank him. And then I'm going to ask you the question that you know about since you've also been listening to the podcast. How do you identify, Jennifer?
I identify as, you know, besides wife and mom and school teacher and all those things, I identify, or at least I hope, to be a hope ambassador, a hope seeker, a hope sharer. That's how I identify because I live every day trying to find hope for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love it. And it's really in theme with the way you are living your life and where we're going to get to in this podcast. So I appreciate that. And I know that you are a woman of strong faith. And I thought you might put that in your identity, but I think you actually did with that statement, right?
Yeah. I mean, my faith is the base of everything of who I am.
Yeah.
And when everything fell to crap, that was all that was left.
Yeah.
And hope was gone. But my belief system was still there.
Yes. All right. So I think we're both going to take a deep breath now because I want you to.
Yes.
Just one deep breath. And then I'm going to ask you to tell me about October 4th, 2016. And I just want to take you to the point where you had both your daughters in the car with you. You had picked your younger one up. They were 12 and 4 at the time. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. And you were headed home. Can you tell me what happens next?
Well, we hadn't even really got out of the friend's driveway where I picked her up from. We were still in her neighborhood and about to exit this neighborhood to go home. We were less than 2 miles home.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped at a stop sign listening to how my daughter's volleyball game went. Mm-hmm. It had been a normal day. It was a Tuesday. It's about 8 o'clock at night. but it was very dark on this country road outside of city limits.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what city were you in?
I was in Granbury, Texas. Okay.
Granbury, Texas. And what's the main city that's closest to?
Fort Worth.
Fort Worth, okay.
It's kind of north Texas, yeah. It was on a hill. This home sits kind of like on a hill. It's a subdivision. And I wasn't really thinking about the hill, to be honest with you. Mm. And I had been in this area before, but not really at night. And I knew it was really dangerous for deers because we are legit in the country. You can't see past your head, you know, the beams of your car. And to my left, a motorcyclist was approaching and I didn't see him. So he saw me because he was accelerating up the hill, but he was blocked by this giant oak tree that, anyway, I pulled into an intersection. I'd made a left turn and we collided.
Right. And on Scott's podcast, you talked about how the car filled with light and you braced for impact, right? You thought it was something else.
That's right. Well, I did. I thought it was going to be a regular car. Mm-hmm. It was like there was no light. And I can tell you that. Like, it was like there was no light. Mm. And then suddenly there was just light. It's so much so that when I was in therapy, the ridiculous part of it was I was like, maybe he turned his light off on purpose. And I was going through the therapy. You know, I was going through my trauma, because it just didn't make sense to me that there was just no light. And then there was just suddenly my car was illuminated with light. And I remember looking from my left back to my right to look at my daughter, and her whole face was just full of light. And we were just prepared to be hit. Yeah. And it happened so fast. And I just remember thinking, this is the last thing my daughter's going to see of me. Because it was coming towards me. It was my side.
Right. Right.
And then there wasn't a big impact. And then I didn't understand what happened. I was in shock at that point.
Yeah. What was the impact like? What did it feel like?
It just made a crunch, kind of like a bump. And I can still hear it sometimes.
Yeah.
It broke my heart because, you know, it was a man's life, you know? So he hit the back end of my car.
Okay.
In fact, just inches different, and he would have been clear from my car. But I pulled out in front of him, and I didn't know. And so sometimes I'm like, should I have braked and, you know, just stopped? Or, you know, because what I did was I accelerated because I was trying to get out of the way.
Sure. Well, you thought a car or a truck were coming toward you, right? You didn't.
Oh, yeah.
So
I had no idea.
That would be the instinct to accelerate,
right?
To get out of the way. So afterwards, you stopped the car, and then what did you do?
I mean, at first, I was in a ditch, and I just was confused and like, well, that didn't match what I thought was going to happen. Like, and then you know, you're just like, did the Lord like miraculously like move this car out of my, like, I know we saw the light. What was that? And the girl's already crying. And then I looked in my rearview mirror and I realized what had happened. And I told the girls they needed to stay in the car to stay safe. And then I grabbed my phone and I left them screaming in the car and ran to him and, called 911 in the dark and did everything they told me to do and was screaming for help. Thankfully, a neighbor that lived in that subdivision came out and started to help me. And the rest is kind of like a blur.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, everything that I knew to do.
Tell me, what did you see when you ran back to him? What kind of injuries did he have? Was his helmet still on? Like, what could you see?
He wasn't wearing a helmet.
Oh, he wasn't wearing a helmet. Okay.
No. And his hands were kind of up. So at first I thought maybe the wind had just been knocked out of him.
Yeah.
He was right next to his bike. His glasses didn't even break.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really hard, like, but he was not responsive. And we started CPR. We thought he was going to make it. He was resuscitated with us. And then I heard that he was resuscitated again on the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 days later, he passed away.
Mm. And then you go through questioning at that point, I would imagine, right? You're at the scene of an accident where someone's been hurt. People come to question you, state troopers or something. Is that right?
Yeah, a lot of people on the scene. No one came to me at first. I just sat there quietly.
Mm-hmm.
They had to block off the road and people walked past me just staring at me. And thankfully, you know, my husband, we were able to get in touch with him and he came to get the girls.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So from like 8 to midnight, I was just waiting while they collected evidence and sat in the cold waiting, not really understanding what was happening.
You were in shock, do you think?
Totally shocked.
Yeah.
Complete psychological shock. Yeah.
Knowing the type of mother you are from what I read about you and from our conversation, even, you know, leaving the girls, right? Like that's a shock move.
Super traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's against every instinct you have. I mean, I have major guilt that I left them screaming and crying, not understanding. Because if I'm in shock,
mm-hmm.
they're also in shock, right. And they needed me, but mm-hmm. I couldn't be in two places and he needed me more.
Yeah.
At one point my daughter got out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she did. The 12-year-old?
She did.
Oh,
she
wow.
did because she thought that the man that came to help us hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you something about my little girl who's a fighter.
Yeah.
She got out of the car and later I was like, why did you get out of the car? You know,
uh-huh.
I didn't want her to see what was happening because you can't unsee it, you know?
Right.
And she just melted to the car. Like I have a black Ford mm-hmm. and is sitting in a ditch and we're on the hill where obviously there is blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm praying that we're not going to be hit. And then my 12-year-old gets out and I'm afraid she's going to be hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's just in a country ditch standing there screaming, Mama.
Mm.
And I couldn't go to her. And I asked her to get back in the car. But then she went into shock. So she's just sitting in a ditch.
Mm.
And we're trying to resuscitate this man. It was very traumatic. There's layers of guilt and layers of shame.
Mm.
And then these wonderful women who were bystanders went and got my children, and a lady came to me and I was like, please go to my children. She was trying to comfort me. And I said, please go comfort them. So then I had complete strangers
mm.
holding my children but they're watching. So they're holding the 4-year-old, they're holding the 12-year-old, but they're standing and watching.
What's
going
on?
So again,
yeah.
And all this, yeah, they're seeing all of it. They're seeing the ambulances. They're hearing the helicopter, the police, the troopers. I mean, all of it.
Yeah.
And they were trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
And they did help. And I'm glad that someone could stand that gap and comfort them when I couldn't.
Mm. So I know at some point you asked someone who was there, some authority. I don't know if it was a policeman or a trooper or whatever. What was going to happen to you or what was next for you, depending on, just what was next for you. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was actually while the trooper was, you know, getting my driver's license stuff, you know, so they had to process the scene first, you know, so
yeah.
All the big items had to be, you know, investigate. I don't know. They're gathering stuff to decide whether or not, I mean, if there was anything suspicious at the scene, I would have been arrested. So they're gathering the stuff and they're holding me in case they need to arrest me, but they're not finding evidence that would tell them that, but they can't just let you go. So I'm sitting outside and then he brings me into the car and that's when he's like, okay, well now we just need to get the regular stuff. Like, can I have your insurance? And I need your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this your correct address? And like the little check marks, I guess the checklist of things.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there in silence. And I finally just say, what's going to happen to me?
Mm-hmm. I would have asked that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I tried small talk too, which was kind of a miracle. I tried small talk and I'm like, you know, it's kind of a funny story. It's kind of like a, wow, that's really random. But I'm literally so nervous. We're sitting in dead silence in this state trooper's explicitly like clean car. Mm-hmm. And I'm so nervous and I can hear my own breathing. Mm-hmm. So I said something like, "Hey, my cousin's a trooper in Paris, Texas."
Maybe you know him? Yeah.
Right. So I was like, "Do you happen to know him?" Uh-huh. And then we start to have this conversation. And I'm sure it was very weird.
Yeah.
I'm sure he left it like, he's like, "Wait." So then he got professional again. Like, okay, yeah, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Trooper came back on and silence ensued and we're quiet again. And then I just finally said, the elephant in the room, like, "What's going to happen to me?" Mm-hmm. Like, "Just tell me straight, yeah. Shoot me straight." And that's when he told me, "Well, normally I'm making an arrest right now." Mm. And if you can imagine, like, I'm a good girl, mm-hmm. like I'm 36-year-old mama who had never had a car accident or even a ticket in the last 10 years. I've had one speeding ticket. Mm. And I'm sitting there confused because I stopped at the stop sign and I looked and I wasn't distracted and I was doing all these things. And I thought that my life would turn out like, unless you have made choices that are gonna get you to a place where prison is a option, you yeah, know, like yeah. You feel like you're not gonna be in that situation. And he looks at me and he said, I'm normally making an arrest right now, but you know, your situation is complicated,
right?
I think that's what he said. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying verbatim, but he said, if he lives, you'll probably hear from his insurance, mm-hmm. and I'll be writing you a ticket for not yielding the right of way. Mm. And I said, okay. And he said, if he doesn't make it, you'll still hear from his insurance and probably from his family's attorney.
Right.
And I said, okay. And he said, we'll conduct the investigation and this will go to grand jury. Mm-hmm. And then you'll find out whether or not you will be charged.
Right. So 2 days later, David was his name.
Yes.
He passed away in the hospital, right?
That's right.
Yeah. You said his name was David and he had children and he was a veteran. And his children got to say goodbye to him. Is that right?
It's what I know to be true. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a donor. I was told that he was a Christian, uh-huh. which gave me a lot of peace.
Yeah.
And that he made that last beautiful sacrifice with the organ donation. And I was really grateful for that, too.
Yeah. I know that you mentioned to me and both in the interviews that I listened to, you talked about time getting foggy. Probably like for most of us this last year, the time continuum is just foggy. But especially during that time that you were still in shock after the accident, right? So it's hard to, you know, pinpoint exactly when things happened. But right?
And or in the right order.
But I wanted,
or my perception was skewed.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, because Scott played that 911 call that you made on his podcast, what was that like? And it felt very intimate and vulnerable. And I know he sent it, because you and I talked about this, to your therapist first, and then they shared it with you. But I wanted to know how it felt to hear that 911 call.
I was really mad at first. Mm. And I'll say that I love Scott. I love him. He's a good dear friend now. I'm really grateful that he did it, though, because mm-hmm. it was one of those things that I thought, I'd like to know what I said during that 911, because I didn't remember completely, or what I did remember, I wasn't sure if it was real, or yeah. I wasn't sure that I remembered accurately. I just knew that I prayed and I knew I did what they said to do and I tried my best. And so when I found out that he got it, I was really shocked. It felt like the most private moment of my life was able to be aired. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that that was okay. I mean, I guess I knew it because people get a hold of him. I just never really thought about that. Yeah. Never thought that way through, you know. But after I heard it with my therapist, and my therapist heard it first and then said, "Yes, I think you should hear this and we're going to talk through it and we're here." You know, he kind of helped me just prepare emotionally and have the tools to check in make sure I was okay, and then to talk through it afterwards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was really grateful then for the opportunity to hear it, even because even the pain is sacred.
Mm.
Like this trauma, even I'm not married to the trauma, but it's sacred space for me. Like there was intimate time with just David and I, and I witnessed in some ways one of the most precious moments of his life, which is his death.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that very seriously. And so I'm grateful that I was able to hear it. I've only listened to it once, and I started to listen to it a second time with my son because my son is now older, and he asked if he could hear it because the boys weren't with me.
Right, right.
And they just kind of wanted to know, you know.
Sure.
And I was like, are you sure you're ready? And so we kind of listened to it together, but I let him listen to it. But I was right there with him. And I said, you know, you can ask me questions and I'll try to answer you as best that I can. And if I can't, then we can, you know, get a counselor also to help us. And because this didn't happen to me, it didn't just happen to David. It happened to his children. It happened to me, and it happened to my children and my family too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, it's imprinted on all of your lives forever.
Yeah, forever.
Forever.
It doesn't go away.
No.
Right.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like Hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
And then, you know, you talk about, we talked a little bit about the shock. I know that you talked about not being able to sleep afterwards and how you were forever changed, that your brain was changed. And I want to talk about that in a second, but I want to ask you about the challenge to your faith at this point.
Oh, I was really mad at God.
Yeah.
I was
why?
Really mad. Because I have witnessed him answer prayers for me. Mm. Like, you would call me BS miracles and answered prayers for us in our lifetime, where I've got the goosebumps. I've felt God's presence. I've seen him heal my children or other people, or, you know, people can fall out of an airplane and survive, you know, jump off a building and survive. And then here was David, and I was like, he was right next to his bike, and his glasses were still intact, and I wasn't speeding, and he wasn't speeding. I followed the law, and he followed the law, and he was right here, and we did the things. Like, we got him CPR right away, and we were here, and I just didn't understand, and I was angry that the Lord did not answer that prayer. And then my whole identity was gone. I mean, I had this identity that I was a good person, you know, do no harm, cause no harm. And I can't ever say that again. And as a wife, I shut down for a while. I'm still not the same wife. Bless my husband's heart. Like, I still hate doing the chores, and self-care is an issue. I am different. You know, I've gained 40 pounds since the accident. I mean, like, as a wife, I'm changed. I can't watch the same movies that we used to enjoy. We used to love action movies. I can't watch them. They trigger me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the most horrible backseat driver.
Oh, I can imagine.
My husband tries to drive. Yes, because it's like, you can't avoid, I can't avoid my trauma. I can't avoid my triggers. They're everywhere. They're like freaking everywhere. And my identity as a wife was like shattered. And like, what if I go to prison? Am I going to ask him to like legit wait for me? I mean, come on.
Right.
Would you? I mean, that's like awful. And then my identity as a mom, like, I'm falling apart. I can't take care of myself. I can't take care of my kids. Am I still a good mom?
Yeah.
Are they even proud to call me their mom? And then the fact that I was just struggling with anger with God, my identity as a Christian, I was like questioning everything. I've told hundreds of people that God is good and faithful and, you know, all these things. And like, I just think all crap now. And so then that was heartbreaking, because then I was really mad that I was even questioning God.
Right.
Because my children have had brain surgery. I mean, we've been through some stuff, and I never questioned God. And with this, I did. But it's good. I mean, it was just a deeper layer. I mean, if you are in a relationship with anyone, there's going to be a time where it's going to be like nose to nose, you know, you got to do some hard stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where I was with God.
And I just want to go back to something that you said. So I just want to make sure that it was clear. You said that you thought of yourself as a good person, and you couldn't think of yourself. You couldn't think of yourself that way anymore, but you don't mean that you're not a good person. You just mean that you were involved in something that did harm somebody. That has nothing to do with you being a good person, though. Right?
Right. And that took lots of therapy to get there.
Yeah.
That is like the definition of moral injury. I mean, you have my actual spirit. In the Chinese medicine, they call it, I think, Shen. And I might be mispronouncing that. And
the Qi.
It's like your soul.
Yeah.
Your soul is damaged. And for soldiers, they call it moral injury. And that's what I was, my entire spirit, my spirit part of me was felt no longer worthy or good, that this had damaged who I am and going forward. Like, I did not see how any good could come from this. I did not feel like I could ever atone for this. Even if I like move past a week, a year, 2 years from now, this is part of my identity now, that there really were a brother, a mother, a father, three children, an ex-wife grieving this man. And that's a part of me that I can't shy from, that I take responsibility for.
The grand jury investigation cleared you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. This is hard.
It's a lot. I'm sorry.
No.
It's a lot.
It's just it's just hard to, I want to talk to you about so many things, but this is real stuff. This is emotional stuff. And I didn't expect to be teary. as I'm talking to you, but your emotion is so beautiful. It's right on the surface and it's so accessible. And I know so much more about your story that it's really evident to me that I am talking to someone who has lived through something that most of us won't live through. And, you know, I love where we're going at the end of this, that you are offering hope to other people. But I just wanted to take that moment and just acknowledge that this is a lot. And this is something, I think you and I talked about this because I'm in recovery almost 13 years now. But when I was loaded, I thought the worst thing I could do was accidentally kill myself. And Scott mm-hmm. reminded me many times that I could have killed someone else. But that would be different, much different than what we're talking about with you. Like in California, if you drink or drive, you can't claim that any accident is accidental or any crash is accidental. You're charged with murder if someone dies, not vehicular manslaughter. It's called mm-hmm. implied malice. Because when you get your mm-hmm. driver's license, you sign something saying that you know that drinking and driving are a deadly combination. So you can't claim that you don't have prior knowledge. It's so it can't be an accidental death. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about something that could happen to absolutely anyone by themselves in the car, you know, stone cold sober, no phone in the hand. It's just something that happened in the blink of an eye. And I don't know if you listened to Pam O'Donnell's episode. Did you happen to hear hers? She's the one who lost half her family to an impaired driver. She calls what mm-hmm. happened to her family. She lost her husband and her younger daughter, someone who was very impaired, texting and had a lot of substances in his system. She calls it a crash because she doesn't want it to be classified as an accident. She would call mm-hmm. what happened with you an accident and differentiate it that way, as do I.
Thank you for that. I've never heard. I'll have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. It's another episode like this where I found my emotions were right there at the surface the whole time because of the tender subject matter. And she's an amazing lady, and she goes around the country talking about that, talking about impaired driving.
It's good.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
And I want to say, yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. You know, I didn't say this. And I really should have. I know that this is triggering for so many emotions, and there are people that will still feel want to push back and that this is glorifying it, or that still hate me, even though it was an accident. And that's okay. That, you know, I don't want my words to hurt anyone. I feel like I've met my quota of hurt for the world for my lifetime.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not intended to harm anyone, you know, what I say. I'm sharing my experience, but if I am being completely honest, my heart is full of compassion, even for those who are impaired, because they didn't intend to kill someone. They are suffering from an addiction, most likely, you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And an addiction makes you do crazy things, and it is a disease, you know?
Yes.
And my heart is full of compassion. If anything, this accident has helped me to have a whole new view on what it is to love, what it is to accept, what it is to care, the level of compassion we should have for one another in our shortfalls.
Mm.
And I'm grateful for that. You know, we had fellowship yesterday, and there were people who had driven impaired and loved ones lost, or best friends
mm-hmm.
lost in that accident, not always strangers, you know. It could even be a family member that they lose, and your heart breaks for them.
Mm-hmm.
They probably don't have the PTSD that I do, but they have the shame and guilt. Because I was sober, I have the PTSD because I was witness and my brain fragmented. And I guess that could be part of it if you want to ask me about my brain changing. But when you have trauma and you're fully present, you know, it changes your brain. It changes how you think.
Do tell me about that. Because I know that you actually had your brain looked at, right?
I did. And I didn't even have, like, nothing happened to my family and I. We were not harmed at all. Just everything is physical, emotional, spiritual,
mm-hmm.
which is very much still important, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I was having trouble sleeping, and I was actually just tempted to what would it take for me to be able to have sleep where I could not remember? Mm-hmm. And then my mind, I could be like, it was a whole new understanding of why someone would want to sleep eternally. Because the pain is so heavy. I had never experienced thoughts like this. In fact, I thought suicide was totally selfish. Mm-hmm. And my understanding where I was so desperate to sleep, but when I would sleep, I would relive the accident. Oh, wow. I would, and then I didn't know what was reality and what was just dream, you know? And so then it was confusing. I was just a zombie. And nothing would work.
Right. And so you were, so then you were sleeping, but you weren't getting any respite. There was no break from the trauma.
No break from
during
the trauma.
Sleep. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Right. Because even that was painful and scary. And then my daughter wasn't sleeping. For the first like month, my 12-year-old was waking up vomiting in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And, you know, she was having nightmares. So we were having to clean up vomit in the middle of the night. Mm. And I was barely able to even help her because I was barely functioning. I mean, it's just layers.
Yeah.
Girl, there's layers.
Yeah.
And we're all just trying to do our best to function. And I then understood, like, okay, if I could just take Benadryl, and what if I mix Benadryl with a Tylenol PM and then I take some melatonin? Mm-hmm. And I had to not do any of it because I was like, whoa.
Right.
What am I saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that became like a new level of understanding that I had made preconceived understanding of what this is for mental illness because I had never walked it.
Yes. Yes.
And now my compassion is, oh my gosh. So the person who drives intoxicated or sleepy, like all these people, they're self-righteous. Mm-hmm. If you drive angry, if you drive sleepy,
yes.
In fact, they say sleepy is even more dangerous than intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
The number one cause for crashes is daydreaming. Mm. Okay, y'all. So if you're like sitting and you're at the to-do list and you're thinking about that argument you had and what you should have said and what you would have said or what you're going to say next, you are distracted.
Yeah.
And you could easily be involved in this. And, you know, then there's their phone. There's the streaming. If anything can make my blood boil more and I have to really pray about it and get off my high horse and remind myself, like, you can't judge anyone, but I wish everybody could hear this at the sound of my voice. Please don't stream while you're driving.
Yeah.
You know, how dangerous it is, you know.
Well, and
anyway,
also
episode.
No, I appreciate that. And I was just going to say that driving angry or sleepy is impaired because you're flooded with melatonin when you're sleepy and you're flooded with adrenaline, which is a legitimate drug when you're angry. So it is absolutely driving impaired. But tell me about
I didn't even know that, really.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's not something that we talk about.
No, but the state trooper asked me over and over again. I had to go through, I think, 3 interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he started asking me these questions. And then he'd have to ask me over and over again, I guess, to see if I would say the same answer.
Right.
I don't really know. But it was like, how much sleep did you get the night before? And I would have to like give timelines. And then he would ask me like 5 days later, the same question.
Wow. It's so
important. I mean, all this was evidence.
Yes.
Yes. How was your mood with your husband that day? Did anything interesting happen?
Right.
Were the kids crying in the back seat?
Right.
You know, was your music too loud?
Yeah.
These are all distractions that were evidence to a could be trial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, guys, and that the difference, it, like, the only thing I want to go back to real fast is like, the person who is impaired and myself, we share the same heartbreak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so even the person who, the police officer that accidentally kills someone, we share the same heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a soul, if they don't have a soul, I guess maybe not.
Right.
But if they have a soul, I identify with them sometimes. And that's kind of weird. And that's hard.
Mm. But that makes sense, actually. It really does. It's, and then that actually segues us. We're almost done, which is, it seems really fast. But I want to talk about, it's CAID, I pulled this from the site. It was a quote that says, "There is no easy path to peace. Each of us must find our own way through the dark night of the soul."
Mm-hmm.
And then it's CAID stands for causing accidental death or injury. And then you and I talked about, you know, a car accident like the one you were involved in, a gun going off, or even giving someone COVID accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are all ways that one can cause death accidentally, and there are many others. And so then there is this organization that is a support group, right, for people
right.
who have done this.
We call it a fellowship
a
more.
A fellowship, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just because we're not governed by anything. And we do have counselors that will sometimes come to group, you know, but we kind of call it a fellowship. And we just had it yesterday. And I mean, people from all over the world, and it's so beautiful. And whether their accident was 40 years ago or 2 months ago mm-hmm. or, you know, March, and we're all in different places, and we're emotional, and we're happy that we've found each other, and we're sad that we've found each other because there really are more people, but it's not as isolating. It's a beautiful thing. It's called accidentalimpacts.org, and mm-hmm. and it's a CADI is what we call it. And I would much prefer label myself. I mean, I could label myself a lot of things, but CADI feels softer to my soul.
Mm.
And seeing that versus accidental killer, you know.
Right.
And
right.
And yeah.
So you're a CADI.
I'm a CADI.
You're a CADI.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, I want you to tell me about two things. I want you to tell me about finding your faith again, that you didn't lose it, but becoming at peace in your faith again and with God. And then I wanted you to tell me about your podcast, Accidental Hope.
You know, it's so funny. As angry as I was with God, I still talked to him. Mm-hmm. And I was still just, I mean, he's all that I knew. I couldn't talk to my husband. I literally actually became silent. I understand why people become mute after trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really coil in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And even when I did talk, I talked in whispers, which is absolutely different from my normal personality.
Mm.
I'm a talker, you know, extrovert, whatever. And I had to really draw in and talk to him and listen to all the voices and sort those voices out. And so I was still talking to God, which is what prayer is, essentially just talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was giving him my full, like, hey, I'm really pissed off and I don't know what I'm going to do. But I mean, this is all I knew. I went to the Bible, and that was really hard at first because the man's name was David, and David is the number one name used in the entire Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. It's in there.
Yeah.
And you cannot flip pages without finding David.
Mm-hmm.
And I would instinctively, to try and sleep, I went to the Psalms and I would have my phone like try to read to me. But every time I'd hear the name David, it was like knife, you know, sting, salt in the wound. So I had to work through that in therapy. And I have like a ritual. When I hear his name, I pray for his children every time. Mm-hmm. And I hear the name David all the time. And so I just take that as a sign, like stop, pause, and think about them. Send them as much good energy and prayer for them. So that's what I do. But I was so desperate. And when I wanted to go find a doctor to give me these drugs, I was like, you know, at this point, I need something to sleep. I need something to help me function. Whatever you, if you have a happy pill, I was ready to take all the pills because I just needed something to feel normal. And I went to my doctor and he was like, no. and I wasn't expecting that, but I'm sitting there. This is really funny. I was sitting on the OBGYN because that was the free, like we had no money too, by the way. Like, so I was like, I can go get my annual. And by the way, I'm going to talk to him because I had talked to him about postpartum depression. So I was like comfortable with him. So I was like, remember that time you asked me about postpartum depression? I said, I think I'm in this now. Like, I think that's what this is. He's like, oh no, this is grief. Mm. And I was like, I'm grieving a stranger. And he's like, Jennifer, you're grieving.
Mm.
And he tells me this story. My doctor that I've known who delivered my 14-year-old son, who's 15, you know, he's like, I'm going to tell you something. And I've never told a soul. Okay, this is my doctor. And his nurse is standing right there next to me. And I'm bawling half butt naked on the thing, you know, to get my physical.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And he said, my entire adult life, like since I was like 18, I've had a reoccurring nightmare that I hit a child with my car. Mm. And he said, I have no idea why I have this nightmare, but it has come up. And this man is 50 years old. And he said, I have this periodically where I am hyper aware of every parking lot looking vigilantly for a child because I've had this nightmare. And he said, it feels so real. And so he's empathizing with me because he's only dreamt it and I'm living this. Yeah. And I looked at him and I said, can I pray for you? And here I am, this person who is like totally mad at God and totally not sure about anything. Like, is God even good? Like, I hadn't even answered that yet. I hadn't even sorted that out with him, but I asked, can I pray for you? And there on this little table, I'm holding the nurse's hand and I grabbed my doctor's hand and I prayed for him that he would either have revelation and understand why he has this dream, or that God would just supernaturally protect him from never causing harm. Mm. And we all just cried. And I'd never experienced something like that. So that was one of those things. I left that office, hadn't gotten any of my questions answered except for a diagnosis of grief.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not giving you any pills. He's like, I'm not, you know, I need you to process this. We're going to call you, you know, twice a week. So the nurse kind of set up a accountability with me.
Wow.
He got me the name of a good therapist in town and gave me another alternative name if I didn't like that one. And they became accountability for 3 months with me.
That's extraordinary.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
That's like, first of all, to be the image
I
of
know.
You.
I know. It shocks me still.
But the image of you in your paper gown, right, on the exam table, yes, with the nurse and the doctor,
absolutely,
on either side. And he's just confessed this thing to you that he probably doesn't tell every patient. And
he said never, not a soul.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've told him something in order to just get some treatment for what you were experiencing. And then he diagnoses you with grief. And then after you pray, he sets up an accountability. Like, that's unheard of.
I know. It's it's straight up miracle. And I'm so grateful. But I got in my car and I remember sitting there for a minute and I just started kind of like, not laughing, but almost a smile where I was like, what just happened? And I was like, it gave me a hope for a second. Mm. Like, I was still able to be used in something what I would before pre-accident call as good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was able to just kind of sit in that for a second going, oh, okay, maybe my life could still matter.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe that walking into that office, honestly.
Mm.
So God never left me is what I'm saying. And they're crazy. Like, you would call me a liar, but I'm not lying. I can produce like people, like things that started to happen. So even though I was so broken and still sorting out, like, God, are you really good? And how can you make this situation good? I've done the worst thing that anyone could ever do to someone. Mm. I've done it. And I didn't just do it to him because David's fine. David's in heaven in my belief system. Like, I feel he has no pain. I feel like he has no bitterness. I feel like he has no anger towards me.
Yeah.
But his family members might, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Jennifer, thank you for that, by the way. Tell me about your podcast, Accidental Hope.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. So when I was trying to figure out how to find my healing, one of the prayers that I had over and over again was, who shares this experience? And I'm sitting there with my therapist and we can't find nothing. We can't find any resources. Mm. No, every time I try to search something, it comes up with real hatred, criminal defense attorney ads. Yep. I mean, it was,
I did the same thing, by the
way. Right. If you try to search it, it's really awful what you'll find. And you can see really quickly how much, I mean, it's hard. I understand that it makes people really angry. And I was right there. Like, I was there. I was the same. I would pass the same judgment pre-accident, same harshness, same cruelty, same uncompassion. Like, I was that person, was like, oh, they were probably texting and driving. I passed all, I did that. So I get it. And I don't judge anyone for that. But so I'm sitting there and we can't find anything. And then we finally find one resource in the entire world. And that's that accidental impact site. And my heart grew 10 times. I was like, oh, thank you, God. There is someone talking about this. And, you know, a couple of months later, there was a call from the New Yorker to do an article. And I'm one of the people chosen to like talk with this journalist. Yes. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Here I am, this little teacher sitting in my closet talking to a nationally world published mm-hmm. journalist. I couldn't believe it. And, yeah. And I was like, okay, what do I do? Do I start a blog? Do I start a vlog? You know, I don't know what to do. And then I hear from Scott Johnson, who says, hey, would you mind coming on my show? And I was terrified. But at the same time, I thought, no one's talking about this.
Yeah.
There are people like celebrities who have these things. They go in hiding. Mm-hmm. Why do they go in hiding? Because you have to. You literally have to halt your entire life if you look at these examples of different people. And people like myself sometimes take their own life. Like there are no resources. You go to therapists and they say, well, we could try cognitive behavior therapy. I don't really know how to help you with this. Mm. And you feel hopeless. Or some therapists will tell you, hey, like, I don't really want to get called to the witness stand. You know, if you've got stuff going on, you know, I don't know if I want to get involved in that. And then you're heartbroken. There are literally less than 10 books in the entire world published on this. No self-help books, nothing. And so I was like ready to cuss. And I was like, okay, I'll figure it out. And so I started this podcast called Accidental Hope. And I thought about all the things that I wanted to do. And my why is truly, I want to see healing in the person that lost a loved one and has to forgive someone like myself. Mm. And I want to see healing and a safe place for someone like myself to share their story.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. Because it was life-saving. When I found other people mm-hmm. who were like, no, I did this. I went through this. I know what you're feeling. It was a lifeline for me.
Well, and that is exactly why we started this podcast, because we know that so many people feel like the only one in the room or the only one in the world or the only one in their town. And then, you know, hopefully they hear your story and go, oh, my goodness, that's my story. And they'll look in the show notes and they'll click on your link to your podcast and they'll find more stories and they'll find you. And then they'll find a community of people.
A community. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So thank you. Tell me, where can people find you?
AccidentalHope.com, social media, YouTube, and the podcast is on all major platforms.
Beautiful. All right, Jennifer, you're fantastic. You're amazing. And you tell your story so beautifully. And like I said, with such tender emotion. And I just really appreciate you being so vulnerable about something that people do have judgment about, but hopefully after hearing your story, there will be more compassion. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hi, my name is Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo.
And together, we run Buffering, a Rewatch Adventure, a family of podcasts moving through our favorite 90s genre television.
If you're a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, well, great news for you. Our very first podcast adventure took us through all 7 seasons of the series. We covered it spoiler-free, episode by episode. For those of you who want to start the show for the first time, you can find that podcast pretty easily. It's called Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Inside that podcast, you'll also find an original song that pairs with each glorious episode of Buffy, and original character jingles for so many of our Buffy favorites.
Buffering has been praised in places like Time, Esquire, Paste Magazine, and the New York Times, and we've chatted with dozens of cast members, writers, directors, and fans along the way. Come hang out and rewatch some of your favorite television with us and a wonderful community of listeners.
Learn more at BufferingCast.com or find us on socials at BufferingCast.